Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got a Purnell, we've got an Aki, and we've got a Horror Acolyte. How's everybody doing?
I'll be doing better in about 5 minutes once my ball sack's done.
Bring your ball sack?
Ball sack noodles.
Oh.
Spicy noodles.
Yeah, I didn't have time to make anything more elaborate, so I'm just going with the old stalwart. And if I'm still hungry after the show's over, I'll get some of this food I had from the other day, like chicken and stuff.
Well, I know what weird food I've been eating lately that has been, like, comforting me in weird ways.
Lettuce.
Gels of tomato soup.
Ew. Well, I mean, that's a comforting food. What are you talking about?
Some crackers.
Ew, screw you. That was delicious.
Tomatoes.
What's wrong with tomato soup?
It's disgusting.
I don't even eat tomatoes, not like tomato soup.
The only time I like tomato anything is when it's on top of meat. Preferably wrapped up.
Put a tomato soup on top of meat, or chop up a steak and put it in the soup.
Or dunk your grilled ham and cheese in there.
Okay, I do occasionally eat it like that. I will admit.
Oh, I do. But I eat it like that.
Except for the time when I don't.
Yeah.
Except for the time when I don't do it.
Shut
so, up. That's a mole for Loki Doki right there.
Or Acolyte, how are you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Allergies kicking your ass, sickness kicking your ass.
Sickness, whatever my family has. It's like I don't know what it is.
Are you succumbed to allergies?
Well, no, I have allergies too, but I know I've got whatever ailment they had. My dad just is recovering from pneumonia still. Whatever gave him that, I have now.
Ugh. Ooh, that's not kosher. Well, I'm definitely
I won't make you talk too much.
Or you can talk and be like, kiss my ass, illness, I'm better than you.
Yeah, you can if you want. The floor is yours.
Well, luckily, my sore throat isn't as bad as it was the first couple days, so hopefully I'll be able to get through this, hopefully. We'll see.
That's a positive.
I might be doing this shit properly, and I don't even care. I'm making noodles. They tell me to drain the broth. I say, fuck you. I use actual broth. I didn't use water. I'm keeping all the fluids. You're like, what?
Yeah, pretty much.
The important part is Purnell's eating good in about 2 minutes. It's going to be great.
You doing anything fun over the weekend?
Me? Or in general?
In general. I know Aki got a cool little model kit.
Yes,
ooh, tell us about the kit.
All about it. Joe sent me the Bounty Star model kit that he got from Annapurna last year.
Oh, that's nice of him.
So I have that in my house, and once I'm no longer suffering from the great allergies of the year, I plan on
gunpling it.
Putting it together.
Yeah,
not really gunplaying it, but yeah.
Jump into Aki's bullshit. You could see some pictures. She's got pictures. It's like a big red toolkit with like model paints and pieces and brushes. It's a really, really cool press kit that they sent out.
Yes, it
big
is.
Big ups to Annapurna if they're hearing this. I knew when it came in, because I knew I'd be getting like a neat little small little I thought it was going to be a small little model kit with some seeds you could plant, and it turned out to be this big ass fucking
toolbox. Yeah.
Filled with just parts and paints, and it is such a cool package, and they went above and beyond on that. So,
and it holds together pretty well even without being glued, which is pretty cool. I wasn't expecting it to hold together for shit, but it held together surprisingly well.
You excited to put the whole thing together and...
Oh, very.
Paint it up?
Yes, yeah. I'm going to be probably having my mom help me here within the next week or two, because she's really, really good at painting, and I'm not so good at painting anymore.
Like, half of it's going to look really, really good, and the other's going to look like shit?
Possibly. Nice. Very possibly. I'm going to have her do all the priming, because they do have a paint primer in there, and it is a paint-on. And I definitely cannot get that on there properly, so I'm going to have mom do that. And then the painting, we'll see how badly I do at that. And if I do too badly, I might have my mom paint over it.
I mean, I would imagine it'd be easier to paint the pieces and then put it together than to put it together and paint the pieces.
Yeah, that's I'm gonna be painting each piece individually, and once they're all done being painted, I'm gonna glue them all together.
Nice.
It's gonna be about a billion times easier. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty excited. There's not a lot of pieces. All the pieces are pretty big, so that makes life a lot easier in that aspect. So yeah, it's gonna be cute.
Gave you a lot of paint colors too. Like, they were not messing around.
You got to believe in your paintability, Aki.
It's like 20-some paints you got. 4 brushes. Something like that. Look at these pictures. Damn.
I think there's actually 5 or 6 brushes in there. I just wasn't quite angled properly to get all of them in the picture. But yeah, there was a
seeds.
Fuck ton of them. Yeah, I honestly thought you were going to keep those.
Nah, I figure if I'm sending the package, I'm sending the whole thing. That's why I sent you the card that had the code on it, too, even though I'm pretty sure I used that code.
Probably.
Yeah. Although it'd be funny if it's still valid. You should test it if it's still valid.
I didn't notice a code.
I think it's on that yellow slip of paper that was right on top. I thought it was on the backside. I thought so, at least. I could be wrong.
I think there was a code on either of those.
Might be thinking wrong.
I think you are.
So, Pernell, what did you do over the weekend?
I don't think I did a ton. It was Easter weekend. Friday, I went to... Shit, I already forgot part of it. I know I went to visit my aunt on... No, Friday I went to see the Mario Galaxy movie. And the theater showing didn't work effectively. It had a problem, which resulted in my showing getting canceled. So they gave us a full refund and a free movie voucher for a future movie. And then I took that money and theater hopped to another showing that was in a non-IMAX screening that was 20 minutes behind my screening, and I finished watching the movie anyway. So that was a fun day. Then after that, I did... On Saturday, I went to visit my aunt at the assisted living facility, and that was fun. And then I did a board game day with some friends where we proceeded to... I have a list of games I'm considering it's called the 5-year plan, where I'm trying to knock out as many of them as I can. And those friends kind of work together with me, like, hey, we can play a couple of your games right now if you want to come by. So knocked out 2 of them, did that. And then Sunday I spent it with my dad watching, having ham and watching the 10 Commandments, which I'd never seen before. Not a religious guy by any means personally, but it was an entertaining movie nonetheless, just as a film. And also, it's kind of funny because originally I had no plans for the holiday because I was like, I don't really do this stuff for much, but I also felt aimless and with no plans. So I just decided to go buy cans of water and forgot that it was Easter Sunday, so nothing was open. but then after that, I got home and did my taxes and was surprised to get a refund. Not a major one, but to be fair, I just wanted to break even with that crap half the friggin' time. So, but I ended up getting a refund, so I'm happy about that.
Very nice.
What about you?
I did jack shit all weekend. I didn't do anything. Sunday, I was supposed to go see my mom. Ashley was going to run to Frackville to visit her family, visit her grandmother, visit her sister, visit her. Like, she goes to so many places in one town. Like, can't they all conglomerate in one place for a holiday? If you're all in the same town, please.
I like that. It's called Frackville.
God. Yeah. But she went to a bunch of places and she had to pick up some some meds and some like cat accessories from one of her coworkers. So she was just going to go and do that by herself. And then I'm waiting for her to get home so we could go over to my mom's, and she texts me, "Hey, I'm at your mom's. Like, were you not getting me?" She's like, "Oh, I thought you were just going to stay home all day."
Apparently I'm
like,
not.
"No.
You're at my mom's house. Of course I want to go.
I want to see my mommy." But I got some bags of mini eggs.
Nice.
And then those, like, those candy chocolate eggs?
Yeah, the Cadbury chocolate eggs with the candy shells. I hope they're still good. I heard that, like, Cadbury and Hershey's have been changing their recipes, and I'm scared.
A lot of them have been doing that lately. I bought a bag of Hers potato chips, the barbecue ones, and I would swear up and down that they put less barbecue seasoning on them now. They just compensate with more salt.
Very possible.
Well, that cost cutting, but they don't tell you they're cutting the cost.
I think Hers is Jacob's favorite. I forget which one. Or is he Utz?
Hers, unless, I mean, that's up for debate now, but for the, normally, Hers kills Utz. But
have you had Middlesworth? Do they have those down your way?
I've never even heard of Middlesworth.
Oh, we got to get you set up with some Middlesworth barbecue chips.
Well, Undersworth.
Nah. Middlesworth. With an A. Warth.
Well, Undersworth sounds so much cooler.
Sounds like underwear.
Underwear?
Yeah, it's like a sweet barbecue. Like, you could taste sugar crystals on the chips. That's how much seasoning is on. Oh my god, they are so fucking good. Oh, I'm gonna have to get you
take a picture and send it to me later so I can see what they are. Maybe they'll stick out to me if I see a package or something.
Oh, you would know if you saw them. They're very retro looking. I don't think they've updated their design in 50 years.
That's what I'm saying. If you showed it to me and it stuck out, I'd recognize it. I'm like, oh yeah, that Middlesworth. So send it to me. I'd be curious about that.
They
but until then, Hers for days. Though there is Route 11 potato chips, which are also really fucking good. But you can't get them up here because they're specifically from a potato chip plant that exists off of Route 11. Surprise. Down in, like, Southwest Virginia.
Huh.
God damn, are they good. Or I guess more like West Virginia as opposed to Southwest, but still, it's so damn good. I went there one time. I went to their actual plant and did a tour and everything. It was fantastic.
I live on Route 11.
So for all those who are listening, if you're in Virginia, go to Route 11 potato chip plant. Or if you're at least in the Virginia area, get a bag of them and mail them to me. And they also have a specific type of hot chip that is legitimately very fucking hot, which I respect and appreciate.
Isn't that crazy though? There's a Route 11 chips, and I live on the same Route 11 in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Route 11 is a freaking huge road.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's the same one. Is it US 11
or is it absolutely the same 11? Because we've talked about taking it all the way down to Tennessee to visit my dad one year.
Well, that's pretty awesome. It's a long-ass drive if you did that. But
it, like, goes side-by-side with 80 for so long. Or 81, yeah. Not 80.
88 or 81, yeah. That's how I know, because it kind of did, like, it goes around. Sometimes a little snake around it, too. But it's such a shitty... It's not even a bad road. It's just slow and prodding, especially when there's an interstate right there. But
yeah,
it's one of the original U.S. highways.
We had a game video 11. About that.
Now you got me wondering if it's actually numerically named. I don't think it is, though.
Probably not. I sent you a picture of the chips.
Yeah.
On the Facebooks.
I'll take the excuse to bite a noodle by going to look.
Works for me. I mean, you got to do what you got to do in life to get things done. Lady McGree, how are you doing tonight? I see you hanging out in chat. You've got Jordan.
I've never seen those chips in my life.
GoldenEye, USAF. Safe Point Society, Latino Heat Carnage. Who am I missing? Golden Knight. Crash Rando, Sir Khaled, Shih Tzu on you. Some weirdo called the SML podcast. Screw that guy. I think I mentioned everyone. I think.
Hi, everyone.
If I missed you, I'm sorry. Unless it's Jacob, then I'm not sorry.
If I missed you, I'm not sorry, regardless of who you are.
If you're Jacob and I missed you, I will try again.
To miss you?
No, to hit him really hard.
With the car?
I mean, there's lots of utilities we could use.
Car might be the fastest and easiest, though.
Bree tired from doing chores, going to do chore core to unwind.
Fair.
Of course. Oh, I'm tired of cleaning all day. Time to power wash instead.
So what is that? Power walk?
Power wash.
Power wash.
As in power wash simulator.
Yes.
Yeah. Chore core. I love that name. That's such a good name. And even though she claims she didn't create it, I'm still giving all credit to Bree for that word.
Yep.
Such a good word, too. Anyway, since we're talking about games, should we talk about games? We got six to cover tonight.
Sure.
We could do that.
All right, let's dive into these. First game tonight, Mado Monogatari, Fia and the Wondrous Academy. Developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart, and Sting. Published by Idea Factory International. Released March 25th on Steam for $39.99. Yay, coughs. Coming to Switch, PS4, and PS5 in July, Mado Monogatari began as a series of primarily first-person dungeon crawler RPGs created by Compile for the MSX and PC-98 during the 80s and 90s. Since then, it has made a name for itself with its unforgettable characters and dungeon-crawling gameplay, even spawning the Puyo Puyo series. Enroll in the Ancient Magic Academy and become a great mage in this charming dungeon-crawling RPG. Pernell, what is Mado Monogatari, Fia, and the Wondrous Academy?
So, in this game, you play as a young lady by the name of Fia, who enrolls in the mysterious magical academy, and is trying to become a great wizard. Through this, she makes some friends. She goes through a number of like various school type trials and tribulations. Most notably, the fact that on her first day being enrolled, some catastrophic events occur, resulting in her being branded alongside her classmates as being a problematic, troublesome class. So at this point, you are now engaged with trying to, one, become friends with these kids, two, team up with them to engage with, you know, engaging in school lesson plans. It's more fun than it is actually than it sounds. Adventuring and trekking through dungeons and hopefully making a name for yourself in solving the mysteries of the mysterious school. It's kind of cool in that I knew that there were games in this franchise outside of Puyo Puyo, but I never got a chance to experience them, largely because none, to my understanding at least, have never been translated into English by, you know, corporations. I'm sure there's some fan trains out there, though. And as a result, I never got a chance to experience them. So even though this is not really that either, it's still closer to the series' roots than what we've been playing with the Puyo Puyo franchise.
Yeah.
So the way this game works overall is that you will be undertaking, well, the first thing I do is choose a character class. And these are four different job classes that represent the types of weapons you can equip, as well as the skill tree for your character, even though it's not particularly they're not particularly different from each other in a way that's going to be like, who do I prefer? Their play styles will change up because your stats will grow differently and the stuff you can equip is different. But you'll be choosing though between those to start. And gratefully and thankfully, you can change this whenever you want in the game. So you're not locked into it forever. It's just you'll have to change it during the game and every once in a while to go based on what you want. After that, you will then proceed to going through a large part. Actually, I guess before you choose the class, you'll go through a large part of dialogue to get you rolling. So if you're the type of person who wants to get right into the game, you're in for a lot of trouble with this bad boy. But once you get past all that nonsense, the dungeon crawling can begin. And to be quite frank, I think the game's dungeon crawling is actually pretty entertaining for what it is. It is the traditional or typical mystery dungeon-esque vibe where floors are generated randomly. You have corridors and rooms. Sometimes you have circular platforms and like usually for like boss floors or whatever, but they're basically corridors with big rooms. And as you're walking through these rooms, you will have a vitality gauge that will deplete slowly over time. If you run out of vitality, you will start losing HP until you eventually pass out. Don't let that happen. Bring curry with you to replenish that bad boy. Curry can be found on the dungeon runs, or also can be made back at the school to carry into dungeons with you. In addition to that, you will find objects that are breakable, and if you smash those big guys up by using your melee attack on the map screen, you can find objects that might heal you, generate magic points, or generate vitality to make it so you don't have to get hungry as quickly as it sounds. You also come across monsters as you're running through these things. But unlike a mystery dungeon game, once you decide to either bump into an enemy or attack the enemy head on, you will go into another screen for the actual phase of combat, which works as an action combat system. It is a top-down view. You and your party members will engage the monster or monsters in such a way where you have, as yourself, a melee attack that you can engage with freely. You can do this by getting up on the enemy or not if you have an arrow or a bow and arrow, and you can attack enemies that way. But there's also a time gauge that exists in the upper right corner of the screen. Think something like Grandia, where I love how I'm saying that as if most people listening to the show even know what Grandia is anymore.
But, hey, I know what Grandia is.
Oh, touche. High five. Eventually, once the actual time gauge reaches the front, you'll be able to actually use one of the skills you have equipped. So basically, abilities that do far more damage at the cost of MP to attack enemies. Now, when you attack an enemy in this game with one of those skills, you will sometimes generate an elemental orb. That also goes for your party members when they use their special abilities as well. You'll collect these orbs. Sometimes you'll let the orbs actually kind of coalesce with each other to create even stronger orbs. But ultimately, you will collect these. And the reason why you do that is because your super, i.e. strongest attacks, are only able to be done when you've amassed a series of different colored orbs and different types of orbs. So, for example, you might want to use like Water Blast, which uses a very strong water orb along with a regular water orb. You get those orbs together, go into the menu when it's your time to shine, trigger the attack, boom. Every enemy in the screen takes damage from this elemental attack. There's something fun about the fact that since the skills generate these orbs and different attacks generate different orbs, and you need different combinations of orbs to generate different attacks, you might come in there with a party that can specifically generate those orbs for you by working together to attack enemies in sequence in order to kind of frequently pull off these attacks as quickly as possible to just kind of keep that cycle going. It's a lot of fun to mess around with that. Honestly, I think the combat in this game is pretty fun in its own right, more so than I would have expected it to be, because again, I think mainly because of that orb system. When you're back at the actual school, though, there are a number of things that take place. There are nothing particularly groundbreaking, but still things that are worth engaging with, such as the ability to synthesize new equipment. There is a light farming element where you can plant seeds that grow into actual crops, which can be used in recipes and such. There's a fishing mini game, which you can use both in the dungeon and also at the actual school to catch new fish. And there's also like a quest board that you can engage with in order to get missions and the such, in order to get rewards by engaging those. A lot of side content comes off of that. In school itself, you'll take various classes. The classes will generally result in you learning new information or new abilities. You'll get some side content with the characters that are having conversations. You might also sometimes get a new assignment that will result in you have to go into future dungeons to engage with activities there to progress the narrative. You need to take certain classes or engage in certain effects to unlock abilities on your character's skill tree. And that is how you basically learn new skills, but also grow your character as far as stats go outside of just leveling up naturally. I honestly feel as though if the characters in this game weren't enjoyable to engage with, that this would come kind of dry. But I honestly feel like once I got past the need to just get into the gameplay, i.e. the combat or whatever, and actually do a little bit of column A and column B because I'm at a point where it feels more balanced, I came to appreciate the actual characters for who they were. They are tropey, absolutely, but they're written very well. Their voice acting is done well, albeit it's all in Japanese. No English voice acting here. And it didn't feel like I just needed to mash the button to get to the next thing. To be fair, though, if that was the case, I feel like the gameplay itself probably wouldn't have been able to stand on its own 2 feet. But the combination of the two effects actually make for a fun experience worth playing. And if you're the type of person who grew up playing Puyo Puyo, or you're like 12 years old, listening to the show, I hate you, because you should be older and ancient like me, you might find yourself wanting to know more about how Puyo Puyo got its origin, got its roots. And this is the closest thing to it, because there are characters from the Puyo Puyo games that exist in here, like the Slimes themselves. And there are also characters that you could generally choose as characters in the game that show up here as boss characters and the like. So it's kind of nice to see the, your main character interacting with these characters for the first time outside of a puzzler. I think the game is a lot of fun. It came as a big surprise, and to be quite frank, if I'm not mistaken, I reviewed a game by Idea Factory like a week or two ago, and it was also good. So the fact that there's two games from Idea Factory in the start of a month that have been decently good freaks me out a little bit. But if these trends continue and they don't involve Hyperdimension Neptunia, they might be on their way back up the ranks having some nice fun.
I just heard games. Something good. What we're talking about? Neptunia? What?
A what? No, we are not. Thankfully, No, you're not.
She's a Neptunia fan.
Oh, to be fair, I am too. But they kind of let the games themselves slide hardcore. That franchise deserves better. But these games are pretty solid. The one I reviewed last week, Ariana and the Elder Codex, and also this bad boy here. And also, it's just kind of fun to say Mado Monogatari. It's fun to say it over and over again.
It is. Yeah.
It absolutely is.
All right. Well, this one clocks in at $30 dues. What do you say?
I think this is a worthy bite of a game. A good time, fun time, and I think it's worthy of enjoyment.
Sounds good. Moving on. Next game to talk about is Absalom, developed by Guard Crush Games and .emu, published by .emu. Released March 25th on Xbox Series and PC for $24.99 and available as part of Game Pass Ultimate. Talam has been shattered by a mystical cataclysm caused by ambitious wizards, leaving magic mistrusted by the common folk. Sun King Azra took advantage of the panic, enslaving wizards through his Crimson Order and placing loyal princes to rule over the conquered realms. As Azra's forces claim more and more lands, the High Enchantress Uchawi and a small group of rebels rise from the shadows, wielding forbidden magic to challenge his oppressive regime and defy his absolute magic power. Horror Acolyte, you check this one out. Tell us about your time with Absalom.
All right. Absalom is a beat-em-up roguelite. Essentially, for the story, we got this group called the Root Sisters, who've watched over the land of Tolum. They got a little overzealous with their magic rituals and ended up triggering this cataclysm. And after this event devastated the continent, a power-hungry individual named Azra the Conqueror swoops in. He outlaws magic and starts attacking all the wizards, and this begins a years-long war across the realm. Some members of the Root Sister still remain to fight back against Azra, and this is where you come in. You start the game with two characters, Carl the Dwarf with his trusty blunderbuss, and Galandra the Warrior wielding her giant broadsword, eventually unlocking a couple more characters as you meet them on your journey, Brome the Frog Mage and Cider. The game starts you off with a combat tutorial. You get basic strike attacks and what's called a skill attack, which is essentially just like a heavy attack for the most part. And the skill attacks, if timed correctly, can trigger what's called a clash, which pretty much counts as a parry for the most part, giving you time to pummel the opponent just a bit, potentially for a longer combo, depending on how much you're able to stagger them with that attack. Landing attacks restores your mana bar. When full, mana can be used for an Arcana ability. You also have a dash that allows you to deflect all attacks if you dash in the direction of the attack at just the right time, and it counts as a block for physical attacks. I'm pretty sure it deflects projectile-based ones, like back kind of thing. Essentially for the story, after the intro, you're on a mission to free the mother, who appears to be a leader in your organization. After freeing her, she sends you on a quest to destroy a series of towers that proves to power Azra and their domain. These towers also limit the power of the mother's abilities, making it more difficult for her to, I think she uses the phrase, give birth, which essentially allows her to revive the fallen in combat, which is kind of like the gimmick for you being able to respawn in the game, I'm pretty sure, for the most part. In typical beat-em-up fashion, you move from screen to screen, defeating all the enemies, usually wielding some type of some type of reward for clearing a screen, gold, gems, upgrades, or equipment. When choosing between upgrades and equipment, you usually get a choice between two or three options, and eventually get the ability to reroll options, allowing you to chase specific build strategies. Upgrades and equipment take the form of rituals, inspirations, and trinkets. Rituals are usually rooted in a specific elemental school and add effects to attacks, like burning an enemy when your skill hits or building up a static charge on your character for each basic attack, eventually releasing a high-powered chain lightning, for example, when maxed to 100%. Inspirations are character-specific abilities and have various powerful effects, like adding multiple attacks to your chain for your skill attack, which normally has like one, or summoning a spectral sword to hover around you to aid in combat, among a bunch of other ones for each character. Finally, trinkets just give you static damage buffs to certain attack types, like 20% damage increase to like aerial attacks or punish attacks, which are attacks you make immediately after you have a successful dodge, or parry, I think, an enemy attack as well. You'll travel across a number of different regions throughout your journey, corrupted forests, toxic swamps, crumbling mines. The landscapes look fantastic, with a fairly detailed, slightly gritty, almost comic book art style. Frequently, there will be objects in the environment you can interact with, or sure, it's more, say, like a glimmer you can interact with the environment to get a bit more of a lore kind of reading for each area and its inhabitants. You also meet other characters who also provide you some worldly insights. They'll also sell you supplies or ask you to go on quests on their behalf. This helps flesh out the story a bit more.
The inclusion of quests that you could do on repeat playthroughs was such a cool addition to this genre, because it's not often that you see reasons to replay and not only revisit the options you already did, but find new things to do.
Yeah, I would say it's
something you don't usually see in this genre, which I thought was a nice addition.
I would say it's a bit unusual for beat-em-ups, not so much for roguelites. I know in more recent history, the one off the top of my head that comes to mind is Hades.
I definitely mean beat-em-ups, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For beat-em-ups, it's pretty more uncommon unless they follow like a more adventure approach like River City Girls or something along those lines. But yeah, it is a bit more common for this. I'll get actually comment again on that in a second. There are a decent variety of enemies. Giant mushrooms, carnivorous slugs, they'll suck you up and spit you out. Lizard archers, acidic shamans. Combat in Absalom is fairly fluid, has a moderate pacing, laying into enemies with fast melee swipes, quickly utilizing arcana abilities to crank up the damage, knowing when to go in the defensive to time skill attacks to monopolize on well-timed clashes. This is especially important during boss fights and comes down to learning the boss movesets. Against smaller mobs, you also like jump through the air, dishing out some bladed fury from above, dodging when necessary, or trying to like group up enemies together to take them all out at once in one nice long chain attack. Aside from the previous abilities mentioned, you also unlock ultimate attacks. They're very powerful one-time use attacks, can only be replenished with specific item pickups. You also can pay to recruit minions to fight by your side until their health depletes, along with occasional mount that you can get that's rideable and has a limited number of attacks.
I didn't know they were pettable.
Yeah, there's an achievement for that as well. You have to pet each mount once. And it's actually important you do pet them, because I think you have to pet them and then they become accessible at different havens throughout the journey. I think that's how you unlock them for the havens, is by petting them.
I think so, yeah.
Which is a good thing to know, because I don't remember if it says that anywhere in the game. Other than mounts, there's also throwable items like throwing axes, elemental stones, grenades. Certain areas have breakable crates that can contain gold or health pickups, among other items. There are several rest-type areas in the map that contain a place to heal, vendors to buy rituals from, or trinkets, or other NPCs to interact with. During a run, you collect points called Radiance. The more you collect, the more you increase your Radiance level, which grants you Primordial Seeds, which can be used to buy new Arcana attacks for your characters to equip before a run. You also get special fruit that allows you to craft new rituals to add to the ritual pool during a run. When you're not on a run, either by completing one or when you die, you'll be at a safe haven of the Root Sisters. Here you can use your crystals to unlock permanent upgrades from the Soul Tree. This is essentially the sense of progression for the game. Whether you, you know, complete a run or end up dying, you'll always be building up your character stats. The tree offers increases to health, damage output, rare item drop percentages, among numerous other benefits. So the map itself is mostly static. When moving from room to room, there are different pathways you can take. So you'll want to take them all. As most paths, you will find little side quests that can be completed to help open up new areas. In some sections, also, you can find secret pathways leading to extra treasures and more bosses. And the room positions will be the same each time during each run, but there might be changes to the RNG on the loot for that particular room, as well as sometimes the enemies that will spawn in the room, along with some other potential changes depending on what quest you've already completed and just how far you progress through the game in general. And, that's pretty much it. As far as this game was concerned, I enjoyed my time with it so far. I'm put a fair number of hours into it. I still haven't beat the first main boss. I think there's another boss after that as well. But, I feel like this game is very well designed. Like, you can tell it's made by people that have made games similar to this before and are very well versed at it.
Indeed.
So that comes through. I think the only, as polished as it is, like everything, the combat, the visuals, I don't feel like it did too much to stand out. You were saying about the questing, that the questing did make it stand out a little bit among beat-em-ups, that's for sure. But yeah, other than that, like, you got your, like, pretty standard, like, enemy types for this genre. The bosses, at least from what I've experienced so far, were, like, you know, nothing. They were good, but, like, nothing, like, too exciting, I would say. But,
The bosses could get pretty cheap. I appreciate that there's online for the game. I really wish it had four player instead of just two. But I
don't know if that's a balancing thing
there. Speaking of balancing, I really appreciate the fact that they have an assist feature in the game that allows you to up to double your damage. You could go to 200% damage. And if you want, you can make yourself invincible. So if you want to beat the game and not worry about dying, like me.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
I was wondering how you beat the game so quick.
How did you beat the game? I'm like, assist? Oh, you bastard.
And it doesn't affect any achievements then?
Nope.
No, it doesn't.
Wow. That's awesome.
Well, it doesn't affect the main ones. I don't know if there's any difficulty-specific achievements in the game. But the main achievements in the game for, like, defeating the bosses, completing quests, everything unlocked. Which, ooh, I appreciate games that allow that, because it still lets me feel my sense of pride and accomplishment
for getting things done. I have the opposite opinion.
Well, this time your opinion is invalidated because it is different from mine. So, yeah.
I'm thrilled this is finally on Xbox. I was really bummed when it launched and it wasn't there. But not only is it here, but it is part of Game Pass Ultimate. Otherwise, it runs $24.99. What are your thoughts on Absalom at $25?
I think if you're someone that's a fan of the beat-em-up genre, it's definitely a game that you're going to want to play. So it's a buy it for sure. I feel like this one was overhyped for me a little bit. Like, I don't think it breaks the mold at all by any means, but it's definitely a well-designed and put-together game. It's worth a play for sure.
I could definitely see how it's been overhyped in some ways, but I personally think it mostly lived up to the hype. The assists make it very approachable. whether mm-hmm. you want to challenge yourself even further or take it easy and just relax and complete a game. But $25, even if you can't afford it, if you've got Game Pass Ultimate, it's on there. So,
yep,
play it however you can. Horak Light, I don't know if you're going to stick around the rest of the show because I know you're not feeling that great, but just in case you got to duck out before the end, do you have any final words?
I'd take your vitamins, kids. Don't get sick.
Emergency, kids.
Yes.
All right.
I have a better suggestion for them all. Don't get old. Then you don't have to deal with this shit at all.
Yes.
So
finding the key to eternal youth. That's,
I mean, there's best an option. Well,
maybe not that solution.
Say out loud, but you know, hey, teach their own, I guess.
Anyway, moving on. Next game to talk about is People of Note, developed by Iridium Studios, published by Annapurna Interactive, released April 7th on Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5, and PC for $24.99. In this turn-based RPG musical, join Cadence as she recruits an ensemble of musicians on her quest for stardom. Experience turn-based combat like never before, where each battle is a musical performance with evolving combat conditions and genre-bending mashup attacks. Aki, tell us about your time spent with People of Note.
Okay, in this you play as Cadence, and she wants to be on the big stage and basically prove herself in this world that is separated basically between the different genres of music. Every city is its own genre, and if you aren't part of that genre, get the fuck out, is basically how they live their lives. So, yay! Everyone is very into the music of the area, obviously. And, yeah, she wants to be a big-time singer. So she decides, hey, I'm gonna get into this little, basically, Battle of the Bands thing and get my audition in, and I'm gonna prove myself. And it turns out one of the heads of her city also happens to be the person who is the manager for the group, the entire city's like largest 9-year running super group. And he's like, yeah, you're not good enough. I wonder why he says that. And only his group is ever good enough. Huh? So you decide to go and start an adventure because you heard that there's another way to get back into the competition, and it's by getting one of the other heads, basically, to give up their old trophy. And you go out to go do that with your friend who owns a recording studio. And the two of you go into combat and start beating the shit out of people, and it's great. So combat ends up being you against however many people show up, because it's kind of, think of it kind of like Pokemon. You step into a frame and suddenly you might have one enemy, you might have,
what the fuck was that enemies. Sound?
I don't know. leave me alone, I'm sick, fuck off. So
I mean, when Horak Light's there, sick, but you didn't hear him bitching the whole time.
Well, you know, I'm better, so bleh. So, yeah, you have, every round, you have your turn and then the enemy's turns. However, unlike lots of games where it's all turn-based, this one isn't like, oh, this is this character's turn, and then this character's turn, and then this enemy, and this enemy, and this character. No, it's like, you get to do all of your people's moves right at the beginning, and then they get to do their moves. However, your moves aren't locked in. So if you want to start with this heavy hitter, you can. Or if you want to start with this other person, you can. You can switch it every time as you see fit. They do not care. It's great. there are numbers next to the basically character positions on the timeline that tell you how many moves are going to be done in each set. So a 2/2 would be two moves on your side, two moves on their side. This changes for enemies. After you kill one of the enemies, it drops down by one permanently. Usually meaning that each enemy has one turn. However, sometimes you might only have two characters in your party right now, but you got a three on your side. That means each one of your characters has to go at least once, and then you can choose which one of the two of them gets the move again. So, yay. It makes fights a little, It's probably supposed to make it fair, but I've found what it does is it means I get to wipe enemies out in like two turns more often than not, which is gives me that feeling of, oh, I'm an almighty golden goddess, hear me roar, and then please go have a heart attack and die, which is great. I love that. Video games for me are power fantasy. I want to be the goddess who just lays waste to everything, and that's what this system does, and it's great. The only problem is, sometimes the enemies have that, and that really sucks, but usually they don't. Usually you get it, and it's always randomized each battle. Now, you go into little... They're called dungeons, but they're literally anything. Like, one of them, you go into a club, and that is the dungeon. So you find some enemies that are standing around that are in your way, and you have to actually go through them. those are required fights. But then you can also push Y at any point in that dungeon that you want to just start a fight. Because you're just busting a move, and enemies are like, oh, hell no, fuck you. You don't get the best move, and decide to fight you. Which is useful because every area gives you a area-specific currency that is a CD for that area. And within that area, you also find somebody who's willing to trade items for those. They have a very finite amount of everything. Like, it's like, oh, here's four items, but I only have one of each. So you can hit Y in order to just farm those out real quick, get all those items, and then continue on your way. Because once you're out of it, they serve no purpose from what I've gathered so far. So that's what they're for. And while you're doing that, you're also getting money and experience for your characters to level up. Money you end up using at the various shops that are around. Sometimes it's buying yourself new gear, be it new outfits, accessories, or a new instrument / microphone for your character that gives you more attack power, what have you. Sometimes you're even buying whole new abilities. They're called song gems, if I remember correctly. And basically, as you get through the game, you're able to equip more of them and get augments from them, things like that. And each one takes up a certain amount of BP, which is beats per. Because everything here is based on music. I love it. And some of them are like, oh, it requires three or two, what have you. Every time your turn comes around in combat, you get one automatically. If you defend, you get another one. So you have to build that up during combat in order to use them. Sometimes they're really powerful attacks. Sometimes it's like healing or debuffing enemies or stuff like that. It's basic magic shit, yo. And yeah, so you go about that. And then it's on to building your own band. Sadly, your record producer dude has to stay in the town because his business is there and it needs him to run. So you head out of the city on your lonesome and you start making a band by grabbing people from other lands. So these people aren't, you know, your pop people from your pop area. So one of the first areas you go is to the land of rock and roll. And inside there, they've split. There's like, they used to be one harmonious group, and then they split apart because everyone was like, oh, I like grunge, so fuck you, it's the best. And so, like, you have this area that's just grunge and screamo and death metal and shit like that. And in each of these sections, when you're going through them, the music in the background actually changes to represent whatever that place is. It is amazing. So yeah, you eventually get a rock and roll guitarist to join you, and now you have two party members again. Yay! Let's beat the shit out of people. it's really, really fun, and fairly regularly, you even get full-on fucking music videos as cutscenes, and they are so good. So, so good. And you get to replay them basically whenever you want, because throughout lots of the different areas, there's this little jukebox machine that you can find around, and you can listen to any of the music that you've found and unlocked, including the music from the music videos. It is so amazing. I absolutely love this game. It has been so much damn fun.
I gotta throw this out there. The reason I haven't chimed in at all is because I know the audio director on the game, so I don't want that to taint any impressions on things, but Jimmy is good peoples, and I'm hoping to get him on the show soon.
Cool. So. Very cool. Any questions about the game? Because I know I feel like I've been rambling forever.
I just want to know if it's good, because I've had my eye on it, and I know a lot of people have. It is a unique blend of genres.
And I want to know it's good, because I bought it earlier today. I want to know if I need to return it or not.
Oh, no, no, you're keeping it. You're keeping it. And Joe, you need to buy this, like, immediately. You will absolutely fucking love this game. This will take over your life.
Very good. Well, it's $24.99. We need an official verdict.
Yes, all the yes. Go buy it. Everybody go buy it, please. This is an amazing game, and I hope they make another one, or at least something like this in the future. I don't care what it is. I just want more of this.
Very good. Again, hopefully we could get Jimmy and maybe someone else from the team on the show in the future. That would be awesome. If you've ever heard of Big Giant Circles on Overclocked Remix, that's the same guy. Good peoples. Moving on, next game, Little Nemo and the Guardians of Slumberland, developed and published by Dysoft, released March 31st on Steam for $19.99. Explore a dream world as the iconic Little Nemo, armed with toys, candy, and stuffed animals in this cute and colorful Metroidvania adventure. Experience NES-era-style platforming, gameplay in a vast nonlinear world that has been hand-animated frame by frame as you unlock new abilities to progress. For now, tell us about your time spent with Little Nemo and the Guardians of Slumberland.
So, this is one beautiful Metroidvania. I'm going to point that right the hell out. And if you're coming at this thinking, oh man, Little Nemo, I remember that game from the Nintendo Entertainment System. No, you will not be shoving yourself into a frog's mouth and hopping around. That is not the thing that takes place in this game. But in exchange for that, you're getting a woefully original take on Little Nemo and a fantastic Metroidvania hopping adventure. So the way this game works is that on the offset, Nemo wakes up in his bed in Dreamland, and he's kind of wandering aimlessly because for reasons that get explained in the game proper, he has forgotten much of Dreamland, including his friends that he met there over the years or his time traveling there. And at this point now, only thing he knows is that a person who says he's his friend by the name of Flip tells him that Dreamland is apparently being, you know, engaged by this horrible, like, black sludge, or I guess I just call it the Abyss. It has an actual name, but I can't remember what's up, man, because I'm old. But it's basically engaging and attacking Dreamland or Slumberland. And ultimately, if it left unchecked, will completely devour it and result in it going away. In a normal circumstance, Slumberland is always there when Nemo goes to sleep and revisits it, but if this takes over, he'll completely forget Dreamland, and Dreamland will not be able to be revived because he won't have memories of it. Slumberland. I keep calling it Dreamland. Yeah, I know. I just kind of find it funny. I keep wanting to call it Dreamland. But the only way to stop this from happening is by going about and exploring the wilds of Slumberland and rescuing the guardians that preside over the regions that exist there. This will take place as you explore, jumping about, and exploring the environments and seeing what you can dig up. Off the offset, Nemo has a basic kit. He can jump, and he can dangle from railings if he sees them overhead. He can also pick up vegetables. Think like Super Mario Brothers 2, where he can pluck up a turnip that's poking out of the ground, and he can throw it at enemies to do damage and kill them. But over time, you will acquire various toys that can be used as both weapons and also as tools to traverse the region and the area you're stuck around in. It's kind of nice how they did that, too, because it stuck with the actual theme of the game. Nothing in this game that Nemo has is particularly violent or malicious, but it gets the job done while using a child's imagination to make it that much more powerful, like a yo-yo to thwack guys or a pogo stick to pop around. In addition to that, you can also get stuffed animals that you can take with you on your adventures. You can only have one at a time, and you can swap them out by finding toy chests either in your bedroom, or sometimes you'll find them in the actual areas. Like if you go back to one that you found a toy in, you can swap out at that actual chest to get another toy. And they all have unique effects that are associated with them. Like one might actually eat enemies, another one lets you read like manuscripts and texts that are littered throughout the map. And otherwise, you would not be able to read them. And I also like that they're also very much references to classic toys like Teddy Ruxpin. And my favorite, which I don't want to spoil because I actually kind of smiled from ear to ear when I got it. You also get access to new clothing, or in this case of the game, new pajamas. And the pajamas work sort of like armor, but they don't actually increase your stats or anything. But they do give you a unique perk that's exclusive to those pajamas that you can also swap out from when you get to a clothing drawer or a chest of drawers, whether in the world that you're, whether it's in Slumberland or from your bedroom. I'm like, it can be anything small, like walking quickly or absorbing damage, or the thing that I use for way too long in the game because of how effective it is for the way I want it to work is the one that increases rank ups. What the hell is a rank up? Well, as you're exploring throughout the map and you defeat enemies, they will drop moons, yellow moons, not green clovers, not purple horseshoes, but yellow moons. And if you ignore them, they will go up into the air, crash onto the ground, and become candy. Candy is this game's currency to make trades with NPCs that you come across throughout the map. But if you decide to catch it before it hits the ground, you will increase the rank up bar or the moon gauge. When the moon gauge is maxed out, you will get a rank up. As you rank up, you will gain access to harder enemies. Yay, sounds like fun, right? But the trade-off on the enemies being more annoying and more difficult is that they give you better rewards when you kill them. Also, when your rank is maxed out, Nemo gets a really cool flip jump. What kills me about this game, though, is that I suck at keeping track of when I'm about to get a rank up. And when you max out your rank, enemies leave bullets behind when you kill them, kind of like a cave black label shooter. So if you're not careful, like me, you'll rank up and immediately jump into a bullet because the enemy you killed to get the rank up releases bullets now because he's now ranked up. So be mindful of that if you're just the kind of guy that likes to run, like smash and run through enemies willy-nilly. Fast travel in this game is pretty cool, too, in that as you go about the map, you'll occasionally come across a bed. When you come across a bed, you have a choice. Well, you can always just walk past it because you activate the bed as your new checkpoint. But at any time, you're able to, either from the bed or from your menu, you can wake up from your dream under the drop of a hat. And when you go back to Nemo's bedroom, you get to look at some really cool, nifty perks and, you know, ruffle through your toy chest and get new, you know, change a toy or change your pajamas. But as you're exploring the main map, you'll come across blue moons. And if you get 10 of those blue moons in a particular region, you can check the map in Nemo's bedroom and choose the next bed you want to wake up from in that area or any other areas in which you've already acquired 10 dark moons. So long story short, once you acquire 10 dark moons in an area, you can warp to any bed you want at pretty much any time you want. Just wake up, choose your map, go back to sleep. Easy peasy. And I actually kind of like that. And it's thematically appropriate to the game. And the downtime to going to bed and waking up is actually very low. So you don't even have to stress about the idea of feeling like you're dragging the game on by just going through these menu motions. A thing I did not realize until I got advertisements for it from the actual band itself also is that one of the members of Onomatoguchi actually composed the music for this game too. So I want to say this, I'm not sure if this is his first solo outing, but it's a solo member outing. So if you already feel like you like Onomatoguchi, well, guess what? One of them's in here. So you might like the music alone for this game's purchase. But even if that's not the thing that's going to entice you and you're wondering, is this game fun to play? The answer is a resounding yes, it's very fun to play. It's adorable as all get the hell out. The areas you go to are extremely imaginative and can be ultimately challenging too. They have an easier difficulty if you don't want to have the challenge of enemies ranking up and becoming more difficult, but I didn't want to choose that, so I can't tell you about how easy that is. I went with the rank up move. But if you want to use that, it is available for you to use. So they thought about people who didn't want too much of a challenge, while also wanting to experience the joy and fun that exists in Little Nemo's Slumberland Adventures. That's not the real name of the game, but I felt like saying it that way. At least I didn't call it Dreamland. Leave me alone.
Very true.
I think this game is actually a lot of fun, and it's precious and adorable in its own right. And the animations are just icing on the cake in that regard. You kind of have to see it to believe. And frankly, I'm just glad it turned out to be good, because I've seen this game at MAGFest and I wanted to play it, but I was also concerned about the what if. What if this game ends up being an absolute tank and being hyped up by seeing it at this show? Well, good news to everybody, including those who may have also saw it at MAGFest. Get out there and buy this game, because it turned out to be pretty damn good.
It's crazy the games that we've seen at MAGFest that appear on this show. And so many of them, I completely forget I saw at MAGFest.
I'm at the almost, I almost kind of assumed there was a kind of a correlation to that, but like maybe the fact that you see them there, maybe.
So many games that come in that, well, that we just cross paths with unknowingly. I think that's pretty cool. Also, well, Aki said one of the funniest things I've ever read, because you said unique twice during your review and she didn't believe me that you said it a second time. And I said, I don't need to make up uses of the word. I can just say it like I just did before, which Aki didn't count yet. And
God damn it, I missed it.
She said, if I thought Jacob could climb up steps, I'd have him drop kick you by falling down them onto you. And that's legit one of the funniest things I've read in a long time.
You're very welcome.
That is hilarious.
I want to still say poor Jacob, but I'm not going to lie. That was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's good. Next up, Legacy of Kain Ascendance, developed by Bitbot Media, published and given to us by Crystal Dynamics for the purpose of this coverage. Released March 31st on Series X and S, Xbox, PC, PS5, and normal PC for $19.99. Legacy of Kain Ascendance is a fast 2D action platformer built around vertical movement, fluid combat, and skill-driven play. Nosgoth's dark fantasy world is brought to life through animated cutscenes and beautifully crafted pixel art gameplay. Fly, fight, and unravel the past in a world of collapsing kingdoms, haunted ruins, and shattered timelines. Aki, what is going on in Legacy of Kain Ascendance?
Okay, so in this, we get brand new, first ever seen lore for everybody. Yay! You play as a young vampire lady who happens to be Raziel's sister, who has totally been mentioned 50 billion times and just y'all forgot about it. Totally. Mm-hmm. Not brand new lore at all. And I don't ask me her name, because it's just as weird as shit like Talor and Nosgoth. I don't remember how to pronounce her fucking name to save my life. So don't ask, please. But she has apparently come with revenge in her heart to off her ever so lovable brother. Apparently he killed the man she loved and possibly ever so slightly did away with her right hand, because, you know, loving brother and stuff. So, yeah, she's a vampire, and she starts side-scrolling, killing the shit out of all of the human knights that are hunting vampires, and until she meets him, and then she beats the shit out of him, because this is Raziel when he was still human. Back before the game started. Woot. And yeah, it's very interesting, because after this, it immediately flips into the next chapter, and you play as human Raziel, which is so weird, because we've never played as human in these games. So, Woot. Plays much better, as far as I'm concerned, as a human than as the vampires, because the vampires have this great, amazing thing where they have bloodlust. If they're not constantly feeding on people, their health constantly goes down. And, oh yeah, there's achievements for beating this on the hardest difficulty. Have fun, fuckers. Wanna know where I started? Because I thought I was good. I have found out I'm not good. But it took me like 3 days just to beat chapter one, which isn't very long, because the whole game, if you're playing it on easy, you can probably beat it in like 4-ish hours if you're playing it on easy. It took me 3 days just to beat chapter one. This is hard on Nightmare. So do not do that first. I don't care if there's an achievement for it. Don't do that first. You will hate your life. There are collectibles to find. Some of them are just some lore pieces, like letters that you can find that tell you different things about the world. There's some stuff that eventually increases your health and your stamina, I believe, is what they do. It didn't really explain what they do. They just fucking exist. I don't know. So every chapter, you're basically playing as a different person. You have the sister character that I can't pronounce the name of. And then you have three different versions of Raziel that you get to play as. You get to play him as a human, when he was a proper vampire working for Kane, and as Soul Reaver version of him, for just one level, I think. And you also get to play as the last character, Kane! Yay! At least I think you get to play for him for a level. Pretty sure you do. I can't remember exactly anymore. But yeah, so she's trying to kill him for revenge and find a way to bring her lover back. He was turning into maybe a vampire? Possibly? We don't know. Vampires had attacked her city, and something she had never seen before had hurt him, and he started changing. And she was feeding him her blood, and she turned into a vampire, so she assumes he was turning into a vampire. So this whole thing is trying to find a way to go back in time, forward in time, somehow through time, because she is flipping all over the place through time, because Morbius is still an issue. That's the name of this entire series. It's how fucked up can we make the timeline? So it's don't not ask the me.
Name of it.
It might as well be, because that's what it is. So it is very hard to keep everything filtered around, because you're seeing fragments of stuff that happens through other games, even like in the second level where you're playing as human Raziel. You see him going and attacking a vampire. And you see the Soul Reaver version of him helping. And I believe in the second Soul Reaver game, you actually play through this segment, I believe. So you're seeing it from different sides, which is interesting. It's all just side-scrolling beat-em-ups. When you're playing as her, you have to kill them and drink their blood, or else you will die, or if you're the vampire-slash-reaver version of Raziel, you have to do much the same. But the human version of him does not, thankfully. However, he doesn't get as many heals, because he can't drain the life force of enemies to heal himself. Instead, he has to find animal tails to eat, because that's what he eats, I guess. All right, I don't
know. This review's getting weird. How's the music in the game? Because I see on the store the soundtrack is done by Cell Dweller, who I absolutely love.
Whoa.
It's pretty good.
Cell Dweller did the music of this. How fucking cool is that?
That's really cool.
It's pretty good. It does occasionally get weird when you're going through an area and then jumping back some. It sometimes messes up the music for some reason, but otherwise, generally, it's pretty good. It's very good background music. I didn't notice 90% of it, because it's background music for me. I'm terrible at that part. I do apologize to everyone who really likes music. I don't pay a lot of attention to it. It is background, and if I notice it, it's either because it's super, super ungodly good, usually because it has vocals in it, or it really, really pisses me off.
So, yeah, we've had games like that. I know that. Reviews have not been kind to this game. Do you feel any differently? It comes in at $19.99. Give us your wrap-up and your thoughts on this game at $20.
I understand why people don't particularly care for it, because it isn't a lot of my cup of tea either, but it is an interesting concept, at least. Just seeing new lore, seeing things from the other side of the table, getting to see brand new stuff. It's kind of interesting. The gameplay is very meh to me, especially the harder it is, just the less time and the less fuck-ups you get before you're just going to die, because you can only hit a checkpoint one time. Once you've used it, that's where that checkpoint is. You can't, like, go kill some enemies and then hop back and get that checkpoint redone or anything. And you can't go visit old checkpoints to get to re-register there or anything. No. So it's, once you're getting off like the easy difficulty, it becomes unnecessarily hard, in my opinion. There's no need for it to be this fucking hard. And on easy, it is so, so easy, which is, you know, great for most people. But it, I think it kind of fucks up the story a bunch. And it doesn't make a lot of sense because it is hopping around through different time periods.
Yeah.
Interacting sometimes with the exact same people, and it just doesn't really explain everything fully, because she just appears in a time period. She doesn't know when, you don't know when, and it just kind of screws things up. So I understand why people aren't for it. I think if you like 2D, you know, side-scrolling beat-em-ups, and you really like the Legacy of Kain and Soul Reaver games, then I think it's perfectly serviceable. Might as well get it. It's a nifty little game. It's not too bad. If these aren't for you, nothing about this is going to change your mind, though. So, for me, I put it as a try it at best.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
Yeah.
It seems like they took a risk and it didn't really click for them, but...
Yeah, that didn't quite pan out the way they were hoping.
Oh, well, maybe next time, but we got one last game to talk about on this show. That is Go, Go, Mr. Chickums, developed by Com8Com1, published by Com8Com1 and Head Up, released April 2nd on Xbox One and Series, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $9.99. Oh no, that sneaky Grabo has stolen all of Mr. Chickum's precious eggs. This misdeed cannot remain unpunished. Get out there and help the poor chick regain his rightful property and give the culprit a well-deserved spanking. And if you ever get stuck, invite your best friend to play the role of Fritz, Mr. Chickum's BFF, to assist you in the hunt. Pernell, what is Go-Go Mr. Chickum's and how many spankings did you dole out?
Spanking. I gotta say, just right off the bat, one thing I find funny about this game is that whenever I would play it, I couldn't. Oh, I still think of it this way. I always hear myself saying the title "Go Go Mr. Chickums" as if I was singing "No, We're Not Going to Take It Anymore." Like "Go Go Mr. Chickums," yeah, "Go Go Mr. Chickums." I've been doing that for the last few days. I don't know what it is, but it helps that the game is actually fun, because if it weren't, I'd be having a fun experience with a title for a game that actually sucks, which this game does not. The best way to put this game is like, it's one of those, like, it's like one of those classic one screen platformers like Bubble Bobble or Parasol Stars or a Snow Brothers, where you're tasked typically with clearing the screen of all the enemies to beat the stage. But that's not how things work in Go Go Mr. Chickums. Single screen part remains, but not the great this level clearing condition. Instead, what your task with doing is returning the eggs that are littered throughout the level to the nest that exists somewhere within the level. If you manage to pull that off, the level is over. And on the offset, that seems pretty simple and easy to do. Mr. Chickums can run around, he can hop, he can stomp on things to kill them, And if he manages to grab an egg out of the sky, he can walk around with it and eventually throw the egg in a direction that he wants to, sometimes with a slight arc. Can't throw it straight up, though, so be mindful of that. If you throw the egg into an enemy, you'll kill them, and you'll get points for that. Eventually, if you throw the egg and you're not able to pick it up within a certain amount of time, it will disappear and return back to where you originally grabbed it. The egg doesn't break or stop when it hits an enemy, however, it will instead bounce off of it, potentially leading to an ability for you to have combos and killing multiple enemies with the egg at once, getting you more points by doing so. So that's pretty much how that would go. Sometimes items might exist floating in the air, or when enemies drop them, you could pick those up for points as well. However, the thing that makes this a score-chasing game is not just delivering the eggs to the nest. It's delivering the eggs to the nest in the order that the level intends for you to do so. What do I mean by that? Well, there's always one egg that is flashing differently from the other eggs that exist on the stage. You are free to ignore this and just throw the eggs in the nest as you see fit. However, if you decide to grab the flashing egg and throw it into the nest, the next egg will flash. And you can grab that egg, and then the next, and the next. And when the level is over, and again, I didn't read a manual or nothing, so I'm just inferring that this is what happens and why you do it. In the event you pull that off, the level will end, and all the enemies remaining on the screen will turn into some sort of bonus item, usually some form of fruit. But I believe that if you manage to get all the eggs in the correct order, you'll get a bonus in the form of a bunch of diamonds flying into the air, which you can click up for a bunch of points. So you are incentivized, if you are chasing high scores, to go about delivering the eggs in the correct order. And it's pretty funny because some levels, in the event that you want to do this, are designed in a way to specifically make this as annoying as humanly freaking possible to do. Especially when you get levels where like the bottom and the top of the screen will loop, or one of the sides will loop, and you end up throwing the egg thinking you got a safe bet, but it goes across the screen and hits an enemy that then bounces back and lands into the nest, and you didn't intend for the egg that you didn't want to throw to land into the nest, but now you're stuck with it and your level bonus is kaput or weakened, because I think you still get a bonus if you get a number of them in there, but you don't get the perfect bonus. You can also come across letters floating in bubbles sometimes on levels. They'll fly from the bottom to the top, and when they're gone, they're gone. But if you can get enough bubbles throughout the 10 levels in a world to spell the world's special word, a door will appear leading you to a bonus room filled with lots of delicious victuals, all worth points, and sometimes with one-ups inside. Again, I like how Bubble Bobble had the word extra with bubbles. At the end of each level, you'll have a throwdown with Grabo, where if you beat him, you'll get a nice score bonus and move on to the next world. For achievement chasers like you guys, the game does a good job of sort of having a checklist screen that's accessible from the main menu that will show you every achievement that's existing in the game, so you can plan ahead to go for the ones you want and potentially eventually get the high score. The game is also fairly long for what it is. It offers a fair bit of time, but thankfully, if you find yourself feeling like you're enjoying your time with Mr. Chickums, but you think you and Mr. Chickums need to see other people for a brief period in time, well, the game will allow you to quit at any time and save it. Come back to the part you left off on with your score intact, that's important, and pick up from where you left off. So you'd never have to feel like you have to beat the entire game in one sitting. The music in this game is legitimately awesome. The graphics in this game, legitimately awesome. The gameplay, you already know what I'm saying with it. Legitimately awesome. I did not expect this game to be anything that I found it out to be. I found this game to be a lot of fun. I didn't get to play co-op, but if I did, I'd imagine it would be just as fun as if I were playing Parasol Stars back in 1991. This game is solid. And I kind of want more games like this. Between this, what was the other one I did recently? Living Dead House? I'm liking more and more games like this making their appearance, kind of like giving a feel of a sense of resurgence in the classic arcade game genre. So this is another one that adds this, a worthy addition to that lineup, and I can recommend this game to anybody willing to give it a try.
Very good. It clocks in at $10. Your official verdict.
Easy buy it recommendation. There's plenty of gameplay here for $10, and high score chasers will have lots to chase here.
You missed a great pun opportunity, Joe, and I am ashamed of you.
Go get this game?
No. It clucks in. at $10.
Oh.
So close.
I thought you weren't the old one here. What's going on?
I should have had that one. You're right.
Yeah, I'm surprised you did not hit that one.
I clucked up for sure.
There you go.
That's a nice, there we go. Nice. There's comeback. You old fucks back. God
damn. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, that was a pretty unique nice joke. Anyway, that is it for this episode. We made it through, and I think I'm going to try playing the Rash trailer from Killer Instinct from Cell Dweller to see if I could get that and not get a strike on YouTube. So we'll find out.
Which Killer Instinct did he do that in?
He did season 3 of the new Killer Instinct.
Okay.
Because
that guy's good.
What? Who did 1 and 2? Mick Gordon did 1 and 2, I think it was. And then Cell Dweller and Atlas Plug took over for season 3's music. And the Rash trailer for Battletoads was friggin' awesome. So, we'll play that. What do you think?
I think that's a nifty idea.
Good. Any final words to end the show?
We're not gonna take it, Mr. Chicken. I want to play that game. I want to play more of that music, man.
You're gonna say Mr. Chicken is not gonna take it. He's
not gonna take it anymore. I love that.
Yeah, this show has run out of steam. We're done.